Welcome back. This is the session on book models. So we'll have a short introduction by Jeff first, and then Andrew and Claudia are going to present some book models to make us all think through.
Good. I mean, the only thing I'm going to do is give a bit of background to the session, why we decided to have this session here, and also give you some idea about what we're going to do in the hour you're going to sit within your cluster, or in another cluster. If you don't like your own cluster anymore, then you go and sit in another cluster, that's okay. But at least sit on a table and work with some people. Or at the table, not on a table. Let's go back to yesterday. At some point when the papers were going on yesterday in the last session, I sat in awe about the work that had gone into the papers. And the second was, where is the question about what is the methodological reasoning that the group has used somehow in there? And then, of course, over dinner, I was told by several people, yeah, but you didn't give us a chance to get to that point, because it's there. Now, why I do that is not actually to come back, because I do think that, so it became clear there has been that reasoning. But somehow, it raises the issue about the presentation of the kind of... No, let's formulatively. If our part of the object or the question that we're engaging with is really reflecting on what is methodology as a form of reasoning and engaging, or forms of reasoning and engaging, because it's clearly there are plural ways of what that means to have methodology as something that you do and that's part of the work, and take that as a reflection, as an object of reflection or a practice of reflection, practice you reflect on. Now, if that is the case, so it's not just about methods as techniques, or it's not just about research design. It's really about what does that mean. And so that's reflecting back on the practice that you do in the analysis. That raises an issue. And I thought the paper, in that sense, it was really interesting that in the papers that came out and the people at dinner said, you didn't let us go to the end. And that's exactly the point, because different things are going on. You do concept work. There is work going on about engaging with empirical material, about getting the empirical material. There is work going on, clearly, about reflections, about methods, but also about the importance of methodology and what that means as the form of engaging and reasoning, which you told me sits in the back of the paper, somehow. But that raises the question I think we wanted to address here, which is the issue about how do you present... This, if methodology is not about a technique of methods that you present, but a form of reasoning and engaging, which involves concept work, empirical work, selecting work, but also reflections themselves about methodology as a form of engaging with it. How do you bring that out in writing, all these bits, without actually people just reading, and I'll use the paper on kettling, just reading it as a paper on kettling, right? But also as a paper that does give us the information which we need on kettling and the way the questions are formulated, etc. But also gives us why certain choices that are made are being made in the way you present, in the way you write, in the way you select, etc. These bits, the tools you use, the techniques that are used. And so we thought it would be good because it requires an element of looking at certain models and books where people have tried to grapple with ways of presenting and representing things in actually a written form, a book, or an edited book, or a chapter, but nevertheless try to work things around that you can do all these things at the same time, ideally without actually putting some of the meta-reflections at the back, so that they appear as, you know, now we're going to reflect about something that we did. No, that they're integrated in the presentations. And that's the background to this session. And that's somehow, I mean, Claudia and Andrew going to present a number of these things. I mean, you don't have to run with this, just to give you an idea what we mean and to illustrate. And then we go away and sit around the table and to think really about the style of presentation, the stylization, the method of writing, and etc. that you could use and develop in a cluster to cover these bits that you actually are covering in the work you're doing. And still have a kind of output that is not just about let's say piracy or something, but is also about methodology or methodologies as forms of reasoning and shifting agendas there. Good. So that's my short introduction.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got three books done, and I'll go very quickly through them. The first one was an initial book that we had thought of, and two others were suggested by Mark Neoclius. You have, I think I've given the two. The first one is Acts of Citizenship by Engin Nielsen and Greg Nielsen. And we don't have it here, but you have the book. We can look it up. I mean, the way the book is structured, I think it's more difficult to follow on the screen on Google Books, but we can try. What is interesting, I think, about the book and the reason we chose it is that it kind of has a dual structure. The book is mainly an intervention in citizenship studies. It proposes a new concept that challenges the ways in which citizenship has been thought. But at the same time, it has empirical interventions, if we can call them that way. So the book is structured in the following way. It has an introduction by the editors, which sets out positions the concept and the intervention more broadly. Then it has theoretical chapters in which different authors introduce different perspectives, but around the concept. So it has this concept that kind of is at the heart of the book. Then you have different takes on this. And then it has shorter, what the editors called encyclopedic entries. I'm not entirely sure why encyclopedic, but the entries, they say, help clarify and extend reflection raised by the chapters. Now, these are very short empirical analysis.
There's no preview, sorry.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because I scanned it, but you can have a look if you circulate it. So there are about 2-3 pages, and they look at very particular, acts of citizenship. And there are overall, there are about 14, the book is structured in 3 sections, there are 11 chapters, and about 14 short entries. And the reason we've chosen this was to think whether, there's some way in which we could work with also the kind of dual model in which there would be some, kind of driving questions, concepts, kind of theoretical reflections around clusters, and potentially some of the interventions around empirical material that kind of do all these linkages and kind of explain the reasoning and so on could potentially be shorter and could be of a different nature. So that's kind of one possibility, one suggestion. The second book that has an interesting format is it's actually a book by Susan Buck-Morse, which is structured very differently. I mean, it kind of combines, so if you want, the theoretical and the empirical are not separated, but it's also a dual track book. The book is Do More Than Catastrophe, because it has text and hypertext. So the whole book runs on 2 levels. So you have, the part high up is the main narrative, it's the main text. And then you have underneath, there's another text that is kind of explanatory. I think in the introduction, if I go back, she says that she chooses some keywords. Yeah, that then the whole text that runs underneath kind of works with these keywords and sets them in context. So it's a kind of a different model of organizing a book. And the third one that you have, that is also not here, but you have it, because Mark has brought it, is by Sven Lindqvist, A History of Bombing. Now, I'm not actually, ultimately, I think it's an interesting format. I'm not sure whether it would work for us, but it's interesting to look at, because it's a book that doesn't work. It works linearly, but not only. It also works, if you want, diagonally. So when it works, it has a series of paragraphs, so the history kind of goes around paragraphs that are numbered. But then in particular places, you are sent to another paragraph. So you can read, in all sorts of different directions. You can go back and read there because you are directed to read somewhere else. So it's a very unusual book in that sense, but I think it probably functions. It also works because it is a historical book. But there's something about sending back and forth and moving in between that particularly when different concepts all speak to each other, there might be something to bear in mind. I'm not sure it could be kind of how it could work for us, but it's just another suggestion, and I'll leave it there.
Okay. Me next?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to take too much time. I'm going to reflect on three books, actually. One is John Law. Is John Law still here? A little bit more free if he's not here. I'm not going to talk about the content of the book particularly. So this book is a reflection on method, and the format is fairly conventional. I mean, it's a single author book. It's univocal in that sense. It's just his argument. And in the structure of the book, the main text is a reflection on method, and he makes an argument in an accessible way. There's a few pictures and so on. The only real innovation, and it's not a huge innovation, is he has various boxes and interludes at the end of each chapter. And what these do, the boxes tend to invite you to think about something slightly off the main track of the argument. So in the first chapter, it's literature. If I can find it somewhere. Probably gone past it.
Yeah, this one. Just come in.
Yes, that's an interlude. I want to find the book. Anyway, so it diverts from the... It's probably not on here. Okay. It diverts from the main argument to ask you to think about literature. What does it mean to write? What does it mean to write for its own sake rather than to make an argument? And then that box isn't in here. But the interludes then are much more explicitly theoretical reflections. So whereas... there isn't a lot of heavy theory in the main argument because he's taking you through the move slowly. In these interludes, he'll take you back the history of philosophy or social science thinking to tell you about important developments or important points of departure where certain strands of thought develop. So again, it's taking you out of the main argument and asking you to reflect on something else. So that's one model, which is fairly interesting. Now, the second one is more interesting, because it's got this bivocal approach, this twin-track narrative. So this is Anne-Marie Moll, The Body Multiple. And the top part of the text is an ethnography. So she goes into a hospital in the Netherlands, observes various health practitioners at work to see how they understand the object of the body or the body in multiple forms. And then the bottom part of the narrative is a reflection on the literature, on the theory. So the style is quite informal in a way, but she goes through and she talks about, for example, Talcott Parsons, the functionalist sociologist. And you can see her reflecting, why is this important for me? Why do I have to think about this? Why is Parsons, who is really very much an out-of-date thinker, why is he important? Well, it's because he thinks about things in terms of their social role, the social role of sickness, for example, the social position of sickness. So in that sense, she is in conversation with the history of theoretical literature in sociology. And I haven't read all the book, but it's interesting that there's two quite different registers at work here. One is explicitly reflective on her empirical experiences, her ethnographic experiences. One is reflective on the theory itself. Probably the methodology is really in the top part of the ethnography, whereas the bottom is a theoretical reflection. But it gives a nice way of how do you separate these two parts, like we did in the genealogy cluster. We had a forum for explicit theoretical reflections and reflections on what we'd done, and then the wiki we used for the actual empirical material with quite minimal theoretical reflections. And the final book I want to look at, only because I was talking about it last night, is this textbook. Now, I'm not recommending we look at textbooks particularly or write a textbook or anything like that. This is if you need a textbook to teach international relations, and I don't think you do, but if you were to need one, this is probably the best one, because it's very accessible, it's quite well written, all the different approaches are represented by the experts from the field and so on. But the thing I wanted to point out is that whereas there are perhaps 20 chapters on all the different theoretical approaches, in quite a theoretical sense, each chapter then has a section which is applied to the same case study, the Iraq War. So you get 20 different angles on the one case study going throughout the book. And in that way, I think it's quite useful for students to see, well, how do you then apply this theory? What does classical realism tell you about Iraq compared to Marxism? What kinds of questions does it raise? Now, it's not, it's, you know, it's approaches. It's not really methodology as such, but it's just an interesting example of how you use a case study to develop a reflection or method. Okay, that's all I want to say for now, really. It's just a way of trying to get us to think about how do we reflect a methodology and how do we then present that in writing, separate from theory, separate from the cases themselves, but somehow in relation to those two things.
Thank you.
There's another dimension we have to take into account. Is more and more we have digital version of books, and that's really something we might want to explore. Because the printing, you have constraints. You know, it's in terms of dimensions of you know what we can do with it. Because one thing I think is important, maybe the clustering is nodal points. That will send you like an hypertext. It will send you to another part of the book, which you can do in a digital media through a hyperlink. But also with digital media, you can use, you know, it's easier to use images, videos, and so on and so forth. And with the iPad, like the development of the iPad, you have, you know, magazine that would use a very creative content that, you know, the reader can immerse himself and play with it. And I think what would be very important is to think of, and I like the history of bombing for this in certain sense, because it reminds me a little bit of, you know, role-playing of books, like when I was a teen. You know, you would go to another pages because there's another trend of the story, and if you make a decision, and that would be actually a very interesting way of putting together the different clusters. But I don't know how, you know, think about it. But something where actually the reader takes over the narrative and makes it the way something he wants to do with it. That's what digital media is very good for this. That's just like, you know.
So. I also don't know how you would do this, but that kind of, that could be also a dual. Now there could be a print version, there could be an electronic version that could do more of exactly this.
Yeah. Can I just ask, because there are kind of practical constraints. I mean, you know, I've just finished a project at the Imperial War Museum, and I've been walking around publishers, and, you know, short interventions, interviews, dialogues, these kinds of things. Nobody's interested. It's not that they're not interested in the subject material, they all write back saying, this is fascinating. But then what they universally say is nobody wants to read 3,500 word essays. For various reasons, because, you know, they're not long enough, or, you know, you can't do enough in them, or this kind of thing. You know, can you do X, Y, and Z? Can you add, you know, 9,000 word essays or whatever, right? So there are practical constraints in some senses to where you want this to go in the first place. It might then shape, you know, because if you have a discussion about ideally what would we do in a formal sense to represent the complexity of what it is we're grappling with. But you might want to start from the other end and say what might be the constraints on a practical level that might, you know, for example, situate, you know, if we just go for a solely digital output, then you can do what you want, but if you need a pen-based output, then there may be constraints.
We're speaking now in terms of a dual track, so methodology and the empirical study, but I think that we're leaving out the third part, so I think it should be a three-track with criticality being the third. I think that's why some of you interpreted our presentation on SNA mapping as perhaps that we wanted to do that, but of course it was to show that there was critical and non-critical mapping, and try to look at what is the difference, how could you do this critically. So I think that if we have an empirical case study, the methodology that is usually applied to it, and then try to show what difference a more critical methodology what is the difference that it can make. So I think if we think in terms of three tracks, that would be a good thing, without saying that, of course, we have to have three sections on each page, but I think there should be these three dimensions of it.
Anyone?
lecture, do we have to agree on one book model for all clusters, or can each cluster agree to
I mean, this part of this session, although we use books to present, what's important is not that we are talking about how we're going to write the book now. It's about the method of presenting and holding these things, whether they're two tracks, three tracks, four tracks, whether you cross it. How do you hold the different works that are going on together in a publication? Which is also a method of working yourself and the reasoning that goes on in actually recognizing that methodology requires to represent these different forms. It's a form of reasoning where these three or four or whatever they are, how many you decide in clusters, need to be there and need to be held and made visible. And so it's much, this could be a method you use in an electronic working paper. It could be something you use in an electronic form, but then it could be forums and wikis, I mean, as I said. So it's an element about the reasoning about how you do that. And these are not the only ones that are there. So it's not about how we're going to do a book at this bit. It's about how to think a bit, how will we represent the reasoning that's going on in the group in a way that we do not have to, okay, we'll have one paper on this, and we have another paper on the reflection on the concept, then we have another paper where we reflect on the methods, and we have another paper where we actually reflect on what all this means for us in terms of methodology, but somehow that it is part of the inherent element of the project, that some of these complexities that are involved as a form of reasoning are represented in the way the stuff is written down, are organized. So that was the idea behind it. Because otherwise we're going to talk how we're going to do that in a book, and that's not the point. The point is in a cluster, how we represent our work in a way that the different bits can come out, that the criticality, if that's important, which is important for us, can be brought out in the writing as a reflection on what it is there. At the same time as we actually talk about the maps.
I think there's also a question of not separating artificially some of the things, because the question of critique, maybe, you kind of want it to be part of one of the analysis to a certain extent. So it's a question of how we hold together, but what we can separate and what we cannot. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should.
One of the difficult things we're trying to do is that all of us have a background as theorists, and all of us have done interesting empirical work as well. And I think one of the things that was apparent to me yesterday was that it's very easy for us to lapse back into our familiar ways of working to present a paper rather than a reflection on methodology. So somehow we need to hold this object, methodology, we need to highlight it, make it clear, without lapsing back into either the cases or the theory, both of which inform what we're doing, but this is about articulating what we think about methodology.
Fabia?
Yeah, I really go into your direction in the sense of what is the voice we want to have in representing something. That is, writing a textbook is not the same thing as writing, like an argument, an original argument. You will think differently the way you write, the way you address the audience, and so on and so forth. So also in terms of how do we want somebody to approach what we want to represent? And my gut feeling is to give as much space as possible to the person, because in terms of situated knowledge, always this is the authoritative voice. So is it a form of criticality to simply let the person, take over the material? But how do you do this in printing form? The only way I know is this kind of like role-playing thingy, which always has a linearity behind it, so it's kind of a fake, Or there is a more like digital format. But that's just that feeling about to whom we're speaking to and what we want them to do with what we do. Mm-hmm. And I think that should be, and that's a very difficult way of rethinking the way we produce and the way we actually represent.
I've got Martin.
Yeah, sure. I take that point. I mean, I think that point you raised there is important, but I would, at the risk of, being the reactionary traditionalist, I actually pose a question. I mean, nobody says, I think, why do we have to make these things obvious to the reader? I mean, I'm actually quite interested with this kind of conceptual kind of new and novel ways of presentation. there have been throughout history attempts in literature and so on to do things with the reader's experience of the novel that are deliberately disruptive, and the history of bombing is like that, you know, you can find that. But that in and of itself is a political gesture. Now, it may be that we want to make that gesture, but I think we need to think about the politics of that gesture. And then, if we don't want to make a political gesture about disrupting reading, then the question becomes, why must these things be made obvious in a way, i.e. separated out to be made obvious? You know, he says of Discipline and Punish that it's neither a reflection on methodology nor a reflection on what's critical, simply because those things weren't necessarily taken out and made obvious. And I think there is a way in which, you know, long prose arguments can foreground these separate elements. Mm-hmm. The question is, and then you're right to note that the question is that it's important not to simply fall back into thinking about empirical matter. So, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, business as usual, but I'm saying if you want to disrupt the reading experience, I think that there has to be some thought as to why you want to disrupt the reading experience. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to respond now?
Yeah, I'll come back to it.
Well, I think I have a very racist part of this, much better than I was going to, and Ray has said in much more crude fashion, which is that I wonder if the. I find these ideas, these book marks, fascinating, but I just wonder that maybe it's something that some of these books I haven't read, particularly, you know, these one of these texts, and hybrid texts, and I haven't read The Body Multiple. I just wonder maybe, for Angie, who in these recently reflecting on them. Do you think there is an accessibility issue here that, you know, perhaps, you know, in experimenting with these more radical models, perhaps we're alienating a certain audience, or give that an audience that we need to be centred into and centred into the needs that they may all have?
Do you want to respond? Or
let's take questions.
I am very sympathetic to these radical models. On the other hand, I account for what Martin and Oliver just said. Somehow, so the question would be, could there be not both in a certain sense? I always thought about a book who transforms itself from a rather traditional way when it starts and becomes more radical or disruptive as it goes along. So there might be the possibility of including these different kind of models of radical, more radical ways of presenting what we deem important, the heterogeneity of the group, the multiplicity of voices within the group, but also to provide for more traditional or more conventional forms of writing and presenting texts. Because this can also be part of a critical message of like showing how things can be weaved together and become more, not in a sort of linear sense, become more critical the more you read the book. But you might attract then other readers than only the ones who were also already critical. That might be as well a criterion for us.
Mm-hmm. Chris at the back.
sorry. It's a comment towards the question about these radical book models and whether or not we're trying to disrupt the reading experience or just something critical otherwise. Mm-hmm. I think it's for The Body Multiple, for instance, her point is also that there's the introduction of theory into her ethnography would have been disruptive to the ethnography. And so she's critically reflecting on the fact that there's an artificiality of sticking in your theory in a linear fashion into an ethnography. And so she's saying that these theoretical points heavily informed how she did the ethnography, and they worked side by side always, but to because the book is arbitrary, the layout of the book. And with the case of Discipline and Punish, of course, Foucault is not trying to disrupt the reader's experience, but he's also not making, it's not a book on methodology. He's not making overt claims that it gets to be taken that way. It's been taken up because it does achieve so much, but I don't think it's like set out in the same reflective way that perhaps we're trying to do in another line. So I'm not sure there is something to be said about constructing the model of reading as reflecting on how the method is critical itself, because you're trying to foreground two things going back and forth between the method and the way you're doing it. There's something to be said about the experience as reflecting the method as well.
But that, yeah, I mean, to me that's a very good point. And another thing that your questions brought to mind is whether these kind of models don't actually, it's not about disrupting the reader experience, but it's about disrupting us and the way we are writing. And yesterday was kind of part of it, because, you know, this kind of form might actually help us, you know, think differently and not fall back into, now we have a theory chapter and now we have an empirical chapter, end of the story. And, you know, how do we capture that? So it could, you know, function to actually, you know, kind of steer us in particular ways.
Can I second that? I mean, I think we're on the wrong track. Personally, I'd like it if we go into the disrupting of the reader. I don't think the task, I mean, the ambition of things is not to disrupt the reader and do experimental kind of novels in that way. I think what sits behind this, why I at least was interested in looking at different book models, is because we want to make a point in the way, an argument or a point, whatever that is, because we need to discuss that at some point, the points we want to make in terms of how methodologies or methods are often discussed and represented. If we agree there is a buzz around methods and methodology, remember in the first workshop, that was the starting point. There is a buzz around methodology. How do you intervene in that? One of the backgrounds is we don't intervene in that buzz. The point we want to make is that methodology is not just about theories, like Evelyn said, theories, an empirical corpus, and then we apply and we have a technique of methods which we just sum up, which then actually will give us the information. Now, I'm pretty sure that many of the books that will come out on this will actually take that form. So there's a reasoning, remember, when we said we have, the ambition is that methodology, whatever that form of reasoning is, but it has to have some juggling of conceptual work, epistemological, philosophical work, whatever that is, empirical corpus, construction of objects, without falling in a rigid research design element, and reflecting back on that, you have to set up a problematique as well within which you demonstrate somehow and work through what you're doing. So it's actually juggling some of these points. So the article or the paper that you use or whatever you use as a format tries to make that point. But to be able to make that point, you then can then not really separate in a little form. So we have a bit of theory, then we have a bit of methods, and now we have some meta reflections on these two things. So that's why I think this is here. So it's not about disrupting the reader, it's about making a point. In terms, and that's why I agree with Claudia, it's our disruption in terms of, it's actually not our disruption, it's actually giving us a tool that in the writing we can actually somehow hang on and be always aware about having to play this form of reasoning, right? And not separating. Some things are separated, but not too separate, because they're still on the same page. They run underneath one another. Or they're a bit separate, but they will come, they have a particular place in a bigger corpus, etc. And then, of course, you can do introductions in which you actually make that point very clearly and explain that.
But in my previous comment, I didn't mean like to disrupt the reader per se. And here, with most of your comments, we go back to key question. What is a methodology? And what are methods? And there was something like in Rabinoff's paper, and actually what you said, Jeff, yesterday, is a collaboratory is a repository. And I think the collaboratory is a methodology. What we're actually doing, like in basic, each clusters are methods of analysis. You know, it's tools we apply to an empirical material because we have a problematic at the beginning. But the collaboratory is the methodology. So shouldn't be the way we represent, you know, the collaboratory as a methodology, something that represents this repository. That's why I was thinking of this way of the reader to be able to access the repository with certain, you know, narratives that we might want to put, but also an ability to just look at the collaboratory as a methodology, so the collaboratory becomes the methodology.
just to respond very quickly, there's nothing to say that collaborative, even when we finish the collaboratory, won't continue to exist as a resource, but perhaps a more traditional written argument would point to that. It would, you know, through the normal publishing channels, highlight the fact that we've done this work and refer the reader to go and do that, as well as reading traditionally, to go and interact with the material.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like we've spoken about collaboration too as a kind of as a methodology, but I wouldn't say it's the methodology, you know, because we do lots of other different things in the cluster. So how are we going to work all that? I mean, keep all that. So that's already quite complex. Yeah. I agree with you. We need to keep all.
But not all the points have to be in one single piece, right? All the time, that would be impossible.
Okay, I think we are actually already in the next session, in which, you know, we can talk more and kind of in a better way the tables. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, around the tables, what I think, rather than have very abstract discussions all about this, like we had, not abstract, generalized discussions, I think it would be like, if you would actually have to write one piece somehow, or two pieces, or whatever you would do, what kind of element would you do to hold at least a number? What would you try to hold together and separate in that piece? And how would you go about doing that? So we then can actually have some brainstorming from within and bring them to. And it could just be a very traditional. You don't have to do all these kinds of different things, but there is some kind of work going on about how would the group represent a certain kind of question. What question? How would you go about it? And then especially of the stylization and the way of writing. And then we can bring that back. Right? Is that more or less clear? Somehow, but part of the discussion must be the question that is the question, what does some reflection back on what does methodology do in relation to your work? Right? So that the methodology question as an object... What?
Slightly, change it slightly. How has methodology informed the work you've done together?
Ah, yeah, all right. Okay, I'll see you. I've got another phrasing. That's a better one. Okay, so there is coffee. Yeah, there is coffee. So if you grab a cup of coffee or tea or whatever and then sit around the table, whether in your own cluster or in another cluster, it doesn't matter, but as a group, somehow.
Thank you.